And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor with Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
Today we're going to talk to Ed Steers about the new film Lincoln, the core of the film, what it's about. Mr. Steers is the author of Blood on the Moon, the assassination, the Lincoln Assassination Encyclopedia, and to my mind, a classic book. His name is Steel Mudd, about one of the conspirators who assassinated Lincoln. The film has gotten great play. Many people say that the film confuses them in terms of content, and Mr. Spears is going to help us. At the half-hour point, we'll be talking to Mahdi Nazimroya about Gaza. Nazimroya has written a piece in Global Research, and we know it's a very important one, and we'll be talking to him at the half hour, but we are at this time joined by Mr. Ed Steers. Are you there, sir?
I am, Phil. Ho.
Hey, thanks very much for talking to us. We have seen the film Lincoln, and I know you have, and it is a very challenging film. It's 2.5 hours, and many people say it's almost like a Shakespearean drama. You have to you wish you had the text in front of you to read it. And there's important matters there that we want to go into with you. But if I could indulge a personal detail I have with this film, I want to ask you about, just for clarification. I spoke of this on the program last week. It's a small matter in the film, but it occurred late in the film that Abraham Lincoln, in broad daylight, slapped his fully grown son in an argument about being in the Army. And it pained me so much, I said to myself, I'm not going to proceed without asking this first. Did that ever occur?
Not to my knowledge. I don't believe it for a minute. Mm-hmm. The relationship between Lincoln and Robert was strained, as it is, I guess, between most fathers and their eldest son, but
yes, tell me about that. Yes.
but I mean, nothing like was represented in the film. I absolutely don't know where that came from. I mean, I have never read anything or any individual who ever said that Lincoln ever even raised his voice in anger and shouted at Robert, let alone would slap him. I just cannot imagine Lincoln ever doing that under any circumstances. And believe me, he was provoked many, many times where he could have reacted, violently. And he never did.
No.
Never.
Yes. And by the way, he was a very rugged individual. I mean, in terms of his own personal security, he's a strong man, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are many examples of feats of strength that this man would. He enjoyed demonstrating that. I mean, he would pick up a chair by one leg and raise it off the floor and hold it out at arm's length to demonstrate his upper body strength. And he did the same thing with an axe. He would hold an axe out at arm's length. I mean, try that sometime.
No. Yeah, I think it was.
So he was a very physical man. He was very strong, but he was extremely mild in his relationship.
And he was known to, spoil his children.
Yes. Oh, very much so. Well, especially Tad and Willie. Willie died in the White House in 1962, and he became even more doting on Tad. I mean, Tad virtually had the run of the White House, much to the consternation of cabinet members and other people.
Yeah. By the way, another good feature I would credit of that film is that Tad, that relationship's very well done there.
Yes, it was.
We're talking to Ed Steers. He's the author of Blood on the Moon. By the way, you can go to edsteers.com. He's written a number of books, of course, about Abraham Lincoln and the assassination. And I always want to say my personal favorite, I think it's an American classic, His Name is Still Mud.
Thank you.
In this film, a lot of people are surprised that this is a film about a political debate in which Lincoln played a major role, and this was some people have said this film ought to be called the 13th Amendment. And I know that you are focused on this and credit that is a something that people really need to understand. I guess I should ask it this way. Most people have heard that there was an Emancipation Proclamation, and that freed the slaves. So then they, hearing that there's a film about the 13th Amendment, they say, what is that? I thought the first slaves were freed. Let's start right there. What's the connection between those two
It's a very moments? Important point, and it really has not been understood, even amongst, in my opinion, many historians until perhaps the last decade. But the Emancipation Proclamation was issued freeing, calling for the freeing of those slaves in areas, states and areas, that were still in rebellion against the Union. It was a war measure. Of course, slavery is protected by the Constitution, the President of the United States. As Lincoln made perfectly clear in the first inaugural, he had no authority to free slaves. That could only take place by the Congress in amending the Constitution. But as the President, during wartime, there are certain war powers granted to the President, and one of them is the ability to hurt the enemy in a multitude of ways. One of the ways is to confiscate the enemy's property, to blockade its ports so it can't do commerce. So Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation as a war measure to hurt the Confederate states by freeing their property. Well, of course, he had no force to do that. There were 4 million slaves in the South. The estimate is that the Emancipation Proclamation might have freed 40,000. So it's a very small number, and it's as they escape into Union lines that they now become free.
Mm-hmm.
But
by the way,
problem, and Lincoln is an astute lawyer, and he's a constitutional lawyer, and he worried about when the war ends, did the Emancipation Proclamation have any legal effect? Because it's a war power. Can the government confiscate a private citizen's property, and slaves were property? Yes, during war, but then when the war ends, can they continue? No. He felt that there was a very good chance that slavery would be reinstituted when the war ended. And so he was very anxious about bringing about the abolition of slavery, and the only way to do it was to amend the Constitution, and he was determined to do that before the war ended.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is captured very nicely in the film. Could you describe, this film has these individuals. We see the man, Thaddeus Stevens, who, by the way, in my opinion, Tommy Lee is a Jones, or his name, should get the Academy Award if anybody does. But who were those opponents, the ones who were... I know we have the phenomena called the Peace Democrat, or the Copperhead, or you have War Democrats, and then there's the Republicans. There's a kind of a division. It's not clear at any one time which way these people are going to go, right?
Well, it went on party line. The Senate, of course, was dominated by Republicans, so it passed the Senate in December of 1864, but it failed in the House, where the vote was much more evenly divided. There were more Democrats. That is, it was closer in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And so the War Democrats, the Democratic Party, almost to a person, was pro-slavery and was anti-13th Amendment. Even those that supported the war, known as War Democrats, were pro-slavery. And mm-hmm. so it failed in the House. But it failed by a very narrow margin, by only 5 votes. And so Lincoln quite rightly felt that he was enough of a politician that he could get those 5 votes one way or another, and sure enough he did. He went in by a variety of arm twisting and cajoling and making promises that caused 5 of the War Democrats to switch. And
That is not an unknown or unique phenomenon in politics.
No. Well, we wish it would work a little bit more today.
I agree with you. By the way, I mean, in one sense, it bothered me that they kind of made it into an opportunity for clownishness and cynicism. But some of that must have been, I mean, people weighing where this country is going to go. they weren't all sort of amusing people, the ones they were trying to persuade.
Right. Well, the Emancipation Proclamation, which was first issued in preliminary form in September of 1862, became effective January 1st, 1863, changed the war dramatically. The war for reunion now became the war for abolition of slavery. Mm-hmm. And so it was terribly important to Lincoln to make that the basis upon which the war would now be fought. Mm-hmm. And having failed in the House in December, it became crucial to him to have this amendment passed mm-hmm. before the new House came in.
Because the war
might end in the interval. Mm-hmm. And even radical Republicans and other Republicans, as well as war Democrats, who supported the 13th Amendment while the war was being fought, it wasn't clear that they would support it once a peace treaty had signed or once the war ended. There were several of them now that would withdraw their support for the 13th Amendment mm-hmm. because they only supported it as a war measure to hurt the Confederacy. Yes. Once the war ended, that was no longer their policy. And so Lincoln was very skittish and nervous about this.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Ed Steers, and it's edsteers.com, is the author of Blood on the Moon, an account of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and the Lincoln Assassination Encyclopedia. Mr. Steers, I'm curious about another factor was what Lincoln wanted. He made that clear in the nomination convention, right? He told them he wanted a platform that would call for an amendment. Am I right?
Absolutely. And this is something that tends to bother me on occasion, that some of my historian friends point out that Lincoln grew while he was in office. And while he wasn't as passionate in the beginning, he became more passionate in terms of the abolition of slavery. And I disagree with that completely. I went back and analyzed every statement and printed word that Lincoln ever made in his life. And beginning as early as his days in New Salem, he was unalterably opposed to slavery, said so, and whenever a chance came up, either in the state legislature of Illinois, when he was a congressman in Washington, and later as president, he acted to abolish slavery. This is why, when he was elected in November of 1860, the Southern states began to secede. They knew exactly where Abraham Lincoln was headed. Even though he tried to mollify them and assure them that he would abide by the Constitution, they knew where he ultimately was headed, and they were right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, by the way, the film might have been helped if they'd had the remarks of Jefferson Davis reacting to each of these moves. Because my memory was that with the Emancipation Proclamation, Jefferson Davis said he's calling for servile insurrection, which is the most frightening thought of all the slave owners.
Jefferson Davis went before the Confederate Congress and said it was the most execrable act ever committed by mankind. In the history of mankind.
That's pretty serious.
I mean, Dr. Mudd is a perfect example. The Mudd family had three farms, all contiguous, the two boys and the father, and they had 89 slaves working for them. Most people don't realize this, but they were the largest slaveholding family in Charles County, Maryland. Well, essentially, with a stroke of a pen, those 89 slaves' property became free. In today's market, they were worth approximately $1.1 million in today's dollars. Now think about that. This yes. family is losing virtually its entire wealth overnight. Mm-hmm. You can understand why they're upset.
Might make them want to kill somebody.
Why they want to kill somebody? I mean, and Lincoln knew this, and that's why he attempted to begin buying the slaves in the South. He offered the border states mm-hmm. the government would purchase their slaves, pay hard cash for them, $400 on average per slave, because he knew the tremendous economic disruption this would bring to the South. And as he pointed out to the Congress, he could purchase, or the government could purchase, the slaves in these four border states for the equivalent of, I believe, 73 days of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can understand this was the crux. This was the core issue of the entire Civil War. The South knew it. Lincoln knew it. And that 13th Amendment to him was the crowning achievement, if you will, of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. This, again, this is Ed Steers. EdSteers.com. He's the author of Blood on the Moon, an account of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Now, there was another component here that is not mentioned so much, but it must factor in, and that is the decision, together with the Emancipation Proclamation, to make to recruit African Americans to fight in the war. Can you talk about how important that was and
well,
what
it was
the impact that had?
To the Confederacy, this was the final blow. This really pushed the Confederacy into Black Flag warfare, as it became known. It just was unthinkable to put weapons in the hands of blacks, and the South feared this tremendously. And of course, the North resisted doing this up until the Emancipation Proclamation. And there were approximately 235,000 blacks that served. And in most instances, they served in some of the bloodiest battles and were in some of the most difficult fighting. And they paid a tremendous price for it because the South did not recognize them as soldiers and did not abide by the laws of war in dealing with black soldiers when they were captured or found wounded on the battlefield. In many instances, they were summarily executed.
Yeah, Fort Pillow, I guess, was the most
famous. Fort Pillow is a good example, but even worse was Saltville in Virginia and Poison Springs in Arkansas. They went out onto the battlefield, and if they found any, there was an entire regiment of blacks that fought at Saltville.
Yeah. By the way, people often do. I was in preparing for the interview. I was looking at Frederick Douglass and Martin Delaney and others, and they should appreciate these were political leaders, and there was black political leadership. They had serious questions. One of them being, well, what happens if we get captured? And also, do you intend to pay us the way other Americans are paid? Those are serious. They didn't just say, oh, yes, I want to go fight the South.
It's interesting. I mean, they were very activist, no doubt about it. And they won equal pay after bringing it up. There was several edicts or orders that were issued to subordinate commanders which implied very clearly that prisoners were not to be taken. Black prisoners were not to be taken. And there was an instance in which they did take several black prisoners, and the commanding officer was reprimanded for it. But Lincoln issued an order of retribution in which he said that black soldiers should be treated exactly as white soldiers. And if they weren't, if they were executed, murdered when taken prisoner, a Confederate prisoner in Union hands would be executed. And if any black soldier was captured and put into or sold into slavery, and several were, a Confederate soldier would be put at hard labor. And so Jefferson Davis backed off as a result of both of them backed off.
Psychologically, what a great moment in American history. Equal treatment.
Well,
phenomenal.
It's interesting. The Civil War is usually looked by the general public, what we historians refer to as moonlight and magnolias. Winston Churchill, when he wrote about it, said it was the last war fought by gentlemen. But I can tell you, after January 1st, 1863, it turned dramatically to Black Flag warfare. All the stops were pulled out, and the laws of war were broken on both sides. And it got uglier and uglier. Another reason, you know, there was this big push to bring it to an end because it was really spinning out of control.
Well, it captured very nicely, by the way, in the book Blood on the Moon. And again, I'll tell our listeners, this is Ed Steers, author of that book, edsteers.com. You can get Blood on the Moon at that site. Ed, I wonder, there's a, it's a, there's an issue that is also misrepresented. There's a kind of, I think you've alluded to it already, a sort of, because Lincoln is like Washington, kind of looms up as a massive reputation, people don't think about him too much as a content, a cynicism has grown up where he's called a racist, or he is an advocate of colonization with there's a key word here, the deporting of African Americans. And I think you're the one who called my attention to it. You wrote a great essay about Mr. I think his name is Lerone Bennett, who right. is the author of some of these theories. But did Lincoln ever intend or ever say that he wanted to deport Africans from America?
It was a political ploy. Colonization was a very popular idea, and it goes back to the 1830s, and there were colonization societies.
Lincoln, we had them here, by the way.
Well, and it was very popular at the beginning of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And in fact, 500 blacks voluntarily were relocated to a small little island off of Haiti called Ile de Vache. And the government paid a contract to the contractor to transport them there, set them up with housing, food, take care of them, and get them started. Well, he didn't do that. And these slaves, freed slaves that were relocated to Ile de Vache, began to fall on hard times, starvation, disease, what have you. When Lincoln learned about it, he ordered the United States Navy to go immediately and pick them all up and bring them back to the United States. Yeah. Now, Lincoln supported colonization, but in my opinion, only as a ploy. He knew you couldn't send 4 million slaves back to Africa, particularly when the great majority of them were born in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so he met with several black ministers and leaders in the White House and discussed colonization with them. Came out of that meeting, of course, unalterably opposed to it. But it's been used by a few individuals, particularly Lerone Bennett, to point out that Lincoln did not favor abolition. He did not favor equality, and in fact was a racist. In fact, Mr. Bennett begins his book with a statement: "Everything you've ever learned about Abraham Lincoln is wrong." Mm-hmm. But it's that same old maxim, you know, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. he just never really studied the subject in depth. He never really got to know Mr.
Yeah, and it led to misuse of language. For example, adding the word deport where there was no such word.
You'll look in the index to his book and you won't find the word colonization. You'll only find deportation.
Yeah, serious misrepresentation. By the way, we're not going to do it today, but in your essay, you cite one of Lincoln was known for his off-color jokes, and you cite in your essay one of the greatest dirty jokes I ever read to make the point you're making now. But I'll invite people to go find that. Now, this is Ed Steers, edsteers.com, author of Blood on the Moon, a great book about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. The film... of course, has a major character that we all have heard about. But I'm wondering, I have to say, I don't know from watching the film what the opinions of Mary Todd Lincoln were. I've heard various things. She's always referred to as a Southerner, and people assume that means that she favored slavery. Do you know, can you characterize her views?
No, she was a staunch abolitionist in a way, along with Lincoln. She did everything she could as a first lady to bring aid and comfort to, I mean, slaves were pouring into Washington by the thousands as they were being liberated and freed, and across the eastern branch of the Potomac River is a section of Washington known today as Anacostia. Back then it was called Uniontown, and that's where they were all being located, and she would make trips over there, and she would bring food and medicines and what have you. She was quite compassionate, and she was, if she had started out her life as a young woman accepting slavery, because her family had many slaves, she certainly changed her opinion when she became a good Republican with Abraham Lincoln, mm-hmm. And was very much opposed.
Yeah, you know,
and I think her portrayal in that film by Sally Fields was excellent. I think both, as you indicated, Tommy Lee Jones and Sally Field, the two of them played their characters, in my opinion, perfectly.
Absolutely.
It was wonderful.
It could be. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, of course, is from Texas, I believe. He's very comfortable with the kind of, I think, language and demeanor. But I found him, he just came right off the screen, as they say.
Yeah. Well, he was a force. He was an extraordinary. He was a thorn in Lincoln's side throughout the war because he was impatient. I mean, he was one of those radical Republicans that from the very beginning said, now. And, of course, Lincoln had to play his cards throughout that war very carefully if he was going to be successful.
Well, by the way, Ed, I have to say right there, isn't it true, too, though, that Thaddeus Stevens had to play his? I mean, who is he? He's an abolitionist, right?
Yes. but in a sense, he was the leader of the abolitionists. Certainly he was the leader of the abolitionists in the House. And I say, at times, was just pushing Lincoln to positions that Lincoln couldn't take and successfully carry out his policies. But in the end, of course, in the end, he brought the 13th Amendment to fruition.
Yeah.
And the film has a nice little twist at the end, as you well know, with that.
Very, very smart. Very
smart. Most people don't realize. I mean, most people thought the woman was his housekeeper, and she was for a very long, maybe 30 years, but in fact was his common-law wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now that was brilliantly done. Yes. And by the way, it's great credit to Thaddeus Stevens. It would be great if Americans and Canadians, others, all learned the name of this man, because unfortunately historical generalizations reduce it to Lincoln Davis, and we forget about all these other wonderful people.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And to Lerone Bennett's credit, he's one of Lerone Bennett's heroes in his book, Forced into Glory, and rightfully so. I mean, Thaddeus Stevens.
Yes, and of course, as you point out, the hero didn't agree with Mr. Bennett.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Ed Steers, it's great talking to you. It's been we've gotten ourselves a seminar. We really appreciate it. You write wonderful books. I hope people go to edsteers.com.
Well, I really appreciate it very much, and I hope that you folks up there go see the film. It's one of the few films Hollywood has done that is, in fact, accurate. I would say, other than that slapping incident, there were only a few very, very minor details that I thought were wrong. But
well, if it makes people think about the 13th Amendment and that debate, which is so crucial,
we've moved
matters forward.
Very important.
Yeah. Yes. Well, thanks again, Ed Steers.
Bill, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Okay, doke.
Let's do it again.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
There you go. That's Mr. Ed Steers.
I just had a major misconception corrected. I always learned in school that Lincoln's wife was a Southerner who was pro-slavery.
I had gotten the same.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think that's the sin of sectional thinking. Mm-hmm. We accept the idea of a north-south boundary, and the Southerners mm-hmm. are of one sort. And by the way, of course, the favor is returned. But actually, there was a strong anti-slavery grouping throughout the South, and it was controlled by the usual methods of intimidation, lynching, violence, newspapers smashed, etc. You know, we know most people, Americans, Canadians too, know the name Sam Houston, the so-called father of Texas. He, of course, was opposed to the Confederacy. He was driven out of office in Texas so that Texas could join. So it's kind of important to keep all these things in mind. You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. You can check us out on the web, Taylor-Report.com. We'll take a break, and we will come back with Nazim Royah.